be. Enough to be extremely comfortable for the rest of your life. But more important, we'll give you respect. The respect you deserve. The respect the CIA should have given you for your amazing work, but didn't. I glanced out the window. We were passing through the suburbs of Washington, D.C. I saw a Starbucks and a McDonald's slide past. It occurred to me that I probably should have been keeping better track of where we were going, but I'd forgotten to. It was hard to focus on my location when Joshua Halal still had a gun aimed at me. "Are you going to shoot me if I say no?" I asked. "Of course not. This was only to make sure you'd get in the car." Joshua slipped the gun back into his pocket. "If you say no, the only punishment we'll give you is returning you to your normal life. You'll be free to go back to middle school and join the chess club and spend your weekends at the arcade like a regular boring teenager." I was quite sure Joshua was lying. Spider didn't seem the type of organization that would simply let bygones be bygones. My mouth was getting dry from fear, so I fished a root beer out of the cooler and cracked it open. "What would I be doing for you?" Joshua smiled, pleased I'd taken the bait. "Given your age, we wouldn't activate you right away, even though you've shown some mettle. You still have things to learn, so for the time being, you'll be sent to our training facility."
"Training facility?"
"Yes. Being a bad guy isn't easy, you know. In fact, it's considerably harder than being a good guy. There's a great array of skills and abilities that you'll have to master. Many of them are similar to those which you've been studying at the academy. Self-preservation, cryptography, facility with weapons. But there's also duplicity, conniving, subterfuge, and killing without making it look like murder, to name just a few things."
"So it's kind of like evil spy school."
Joshua frowned.
"I suppose, although we prefer to call it the Wiseman Preparatory Academy."
"Why?"
"Because evil spy school sounds a little suspicious, don't you think?"
I glanced out the window again, just in time to see us go past a Starbucks and a McDonald's. I had no idea if they were the same Starbucks and McDonald's we'd passed before, or different ones that merely looked the same. I took another sip of root beer.
"Where is this academy?"
Joshua chuckled. "You don't honestly think I'd tell you before you accepted our offer?"
"I was only wondering if it was far. I just got done unpacking."
"So you'll pack again? This isn't some pedestrian commuter school. Should you say yes, we will return to your home and inform your parents that Wiseman Prep sees an opportunity where those fools at St. Smithens no longer do. You now have a brand new scholarship that will require you to reside at another school, effective immediately."
"Immediately?" I repeated.
"Yes. The sooner you can begin your training with us, the better."
"I understand, but you're asking me to make a really big decision here. Can I at least have a little time to think it over?"
"Of course. You can have 3 minutes." Joshua plucked a book of crossword puzzles out of the seat back pocket in front of him and turned his attention to it. I stared out the window again. Another Starbucks slid by, although I was relatively sure this was a different one.
I really didn't want to join Spider. Even though the Academy of Espionage had treated me badly, it still seemed wrong to go to the dark side. I simply wasn't an evil person. But a few things made me think I shouldn't reject Spider's offer. First, Joshua would kill me if I did, which was a very powerful incentive to say yes. Second, as bad as going to evil spy school sounded, it would probably still be better than normal middle school. Third, Erica's final words kept coming back to me. "The next time someone comes to you with an offer to change your life, accept it, and then try not to mess it up like you did this time." In retrospect, it had been kind of an odd thing to say. Now it made me wonder, had Erica suspected this was going to happen all along? I thought back to the mortar incident that had gotten me in trouble, realizing what had been bothering me about it. There was a very good chance that Erica had planted the live round. She'd been carrying a knapsack throughout the Saxa. She could have easily smuggled in a live round designed to look like a paint bomb, then tricked Warren into loading it. It would certainly explain how she'd known the round was live so quickly. And now that I thought about it, it also explained how Warren had been able to wrest the remote trigger away from Erica. On an average day, Erica could have outfought Warren in her sleep. There was no way he'd have ended up with the trigger unless she wanted him to have it. Everything seemed to indicate that I hadn't randomly fired that bomb at the Nathan Hale building. I'd been manipulated into doing it. Could it all have been a setup to make Spider think I'd been kicked out of spy school? Or was I deluding myself, inventing evidence to make myself feel better after getting expelled for real? If it hadn't been for those last words of Erica's, I would have figured I was deluding myself. but this was certainly an offer to change my life, and she'd given me specific instructions on what to do if such an offer came along. I still had 1,000 questions. Was Erica working with someone else, or had she gone rogue and dragged me in? Did the principal know about this, or was he just a pawn like me? Did Erica know Joshua Halal was still alive? If I did go to evil spy school, what was my assignment? Was I supposed to only be a mole, or was there something more specific? What was I supposed to be looking for? Was this really an undercover mission? If so, why hadn't anyone told me about it? And did I actually have what it took to succeed?
"Time's up," Joshua said. I turned back from the window, where another Starbucks was passing. Joshua was looking at me expectantly. The bulge of his gun was barely visible inside his pocket. I took a deep breath, hoping that I'd interpreted everything correctly and that I wasn't making the worst decision of my life. "I'm in," I said.
Chapter 5. Immersion. Spider Agent Training Facility. Location, unknown. September 5, 10:30 hours. I woke in a strange room. I felt groggy, like I'd been drugged. It took me only a few seconds to figure out why. I had been drugged. A 13-year-old kid probably shouldn't have been drugged enough times to recognize the sensation, but that was life when you were a spy in training. My head was pounding, and my mouth felt like it was stuffed with cotton. Joshua Halal had done this to me. Even with my mind cloudy, I had no doubt of that. There wasn't anyone else who could have done it. Immediately after I'd accepted his offer, we'd driven to my house, where he'd presented my parents with an official-looking contract stating that I had been accepted with a full scholarship to another school for gifted children. Joshua had claimed to be my new student advisor, shown them some glossy promotional brochures, and had gone on at great length about how Wiseman Preparatory Academy was an even better school than St. Smithens. He sold it well, although Mom and Dad seemed just as impressed by him as the school. My parents were at once pleased by my prowess and saddened that I'd be leaving again, though they were perhaps a bit more prone to accept the offer as my middle school principal had just informed them that I'd received 6 weeks of detention for fighting and then skipping school. We had a farewell meal where Joshua was the perfect guest, charming and graceful and not the slightest bit evil. And then, well, I wasn't quite sure what had happened after that. The whole point of drugging someone is to leave some blanks in their memory. Joshua must have slipped me something shortly after dinner, probably in the apple pie Mom had made for dessert. My eyelids were so heavy it felt like they were made of steel. I fought to keep them open and took in my surroundings. I was in a bedroom, a nice bedroom, bigger than mine back home, and several times larger than my dorm room at spy school. But then, I'd been in closets bigger than my dorm room at spy school. The room was bare, save for a twin bed which I was currently lying on, a dresser, a desk, and my suitcases. Apparently I'd packed my clothes, or someone had packed them for me. Except for the suitcases, everything in the room seemed to be brand new, including the room itself. There wasn't a scratch on the walls, which smelled faintly of fresh paint, or a stain on the carpet. The bed sheets were crisp and still had the creases that indicated they'd recently come out of the package. The walls were bare, too, except for a framed inspirational poster, a photo of a mountain climber standing atop a snowy peak, and the mantra, "Opportunity is always knocking. Most people just don't open the door." There was a closet, a private bathroom, and a large window. The sun was streaming through the blinds from a high angle, indicating it was well into the morning. I generally had an extremely good sense of time, knowing exactly when it was without needing to check my watch. One of the perks of my innate math skills. But it didn't work so well after I'd been drugged, so I used my watch. It was 10:34 a.m. I'd been out for at least 16 hours. I struggled to my feet and started running in place. The best way to fight off a drug haze was to get your blood flowing. The moment my legs began pumping, I felt better. I jogged over to the window. Evil spy school didn't look a thing like I'd expected. I'd figured it would appear, at least in some way, like a campus. Perhaps the classic Gothic style of the Academy of Espionage, or maybe more architecturally modern, but at least something with stately buildings and gymnasiums and grassy expanses where students could hang out and play ultimate frisbee. But of course, evil spy school wasn't like that at all. Spider never did anything that anyone expected. I was in a brand new gated suburban community, or at least it looked like a brand new gated suburban community. I was on a street lined with homes that were almost identical. There were subtle differences between them, but they were all two stories with tile roofs and wide front porches and manicured lawns. I could tell it was all new because the street was perfectly black, the sidewalks were perfectly white, and the lawns looked like they had been put down that morning. The trees hadn't any time to grow. They were mere saplings sprouting every 20 feet along the road. A few years before, my parents had considered moving to a community like this. We'd visited several. This looked like every single one of them. My mind was now cleared from my exertion, or at least I thought it was. My surroundings were so odd, part of me wondered if I was hallucinating them. I tested out the bathroom. After all, it had been more than 16 hours since I'd last urinated. The toilet worked perfectly. It was also nice and clean and smelled like ammonia. This was a change from spy school, where the dormitory toilets probably hadn't been cleaned since the Clinton administration. Having a private shower was pretty cool, too. The ones at spy school were all shared, which meant cleaning off was rarely relaxing, because someone was always clamoring for you to vacate the stall. Plus, the hot water tended to run out, usually right at the point when you were completely lathered up. I turned on my sink to check the water. It was nice and hot. While I was washing my hands, I noticed I was still in the same clothes I'd worn to school the day before. However, something seemed different. I felt my pockets and realized what was wrong. My phone was gone. I returned to my room and quickly rooted through my suitcases. The phone wasn't there. I had no doubt it had been taken from me, which meant that, for the moment, I had no way to contact anyone on the outside, or determine where on earth I was. I tried the door to my room, expecting it to be locked. It wasn't. The hall outside was equally new-looking, with fresh carpet and paint. One end led to three other doors, all shut, presumably more bedrooms. From the other end, I could hear someone playing a video game. I went that way. The hall led to a staircase, which swept down into a large common area, a kind of living room, family room, kitchen. It looked like teenagers had furnished it. There was a foosball, air hockey, and a drum set. Instead of a dining room table, there was a ping-pong table, its surface covered with half-eaten bags of chips and unwashed cereal bowls. The only piece of actual furniture was a couch, which was oriented directly at the largest television I'd ever seen. A kid who appeared to be around 15 years old was slumped on the couch playing the video game I'd heard. I didn't recognize the game, but it was some sort of air combat simulator, and the kid was extremely good at it, racing fighter jets across digital landscapes and carpet-bombing the enemy. He was stick-thin with a mop of wiry dark hair, wearing unfashionable glasses and a t-shirt smeared with Day-Glo orange Cheetos dust. His face was a minefield of pimples. His eyes flicked in my direction, but he made no attempt to introduce himself, or smile, or be friendly in any way whatsoever. "Hi," I said, "I'm Ben." The kid didn't respond. He had returned his full attention to the game, where two enemy planes were now attacking him. He dodged them with ease, then launched two missiles into a bridge, which exploded so violently that the entire room was momentarily bathed in red. I noticed that his lips were moving, but he wasn't talking to me. He was mumbling softly to himself. It was hard to hear over all the virtual explosions, but it appeared to be a run-on commentary on what he was doing. "Adjust altitude, employ boosters, find targets, ready munitions." I tried to engage him again. "I just got here. I'm not sure when, exactly, because I was drugged. It's nice to meet you." This was a lie. It wasn't really nice to meet the kid at all. It was sort of like meeting a brick. "Evade flak," the kid mumbled. "Lock on targets, bomb away." On the TV, two more missiles detonated, reducing another bridge to dust. "Do you have a name?" I asked. "Nefarious," the kid said so quietly I didn't think I heard it right. "Nefarious?" I repeated. "That's his name," said someone behind me. I spun around to find a girl there. She looked to be my age, and she was exceptionally perky, with a big smile and wide, bright eyes. She was short, but very physically fit. I could tell this right away because she was wearing a sparkly pink leotard. She also had glitter in her hair. "His name's Nefarious?" I asked. "Right. It's not his nickname or anything. It's his real name, Nefarious Jones, and I'm Ashley Sparks. Nice to meet you." The girl held out a hand. She had rainbows painted on her fingernails. We shook hands. Ashley's hand seemed to be only about half the size of mine, but her grip was startlingly strong. "I'm Ben," I said. "Ben Ripley. No need to introduce yourself. You're pretty famous around here, given how much trouble you've caused Spider over the last year." "Oh," I lowered my eyes, embarrassed. "Sorry about that." Ashley waved this off. "Hey, they weren't my missions. Anyhow, It's swawsome to have you on our side now.
Swawsome? I asked.
Yeah, sweet plus awesome. Swawsome! Are you hungry? I'll bet you're hungry.
I realized this was true. My stomach was grumbling. Ashley waved to the kitchen.
Help yourself to anything you want.
Not the Cheetos, Nefarious said quickly.
Except the Cheetos, Ashley corrected. Nefarious is a big old Scrooge with his snacks, even though he doesn't even pay for them. Spider covers the bills, and they have a staff that does all the shopping for us. So if there's anything you want and we don't have it, just fill out a requisition form and they'll get it.
I opened the kitchen cabinets. One was fully stocked with sugared cereal, instant pudding, and a staggering amount of Cheetos. The other was filled with large canisters of powder. I took one out and examined the label. The ingredient list was filled with words I had never seen before, even though I was relatively sure they were English.
Ergocalciferol, phytonadione, pyrophosphate? What is this stuff? I asked.
Power powder, Ashley exclaimed. One scoop provides me with all the probiotics, antioxidants, and digestive enzymes I need each day, though I like to throw in a little chia seed to boost my omega-3s. I use it to make energy shakes. Want one? They're tealicious.
I took a moment to figure that one out. Tasty plus delicious?
Exactly. And they give you a ton of energy. They're all I eat, every day.
Really? I asked. You don't eat food? Ashley shook her head.
Oh, no. These are better than food.
I was pretty sure that, as far as meals were concerned, there wasn't anything better than food, but I kept this to myself. I didn't want to offend Ashley right after meeting her.
Sounds great, but I'm kind of in the mood for cereal right now. I always want carbs after I've been sedated.
I grabbed a box of Lucky Charms, which was the only cereal I could find that didn't have chocolate flavoring in it.
Is there any fruit?
No, Ashley admitted. And I think we're out of milk, too. I opened the fridge and confirmed she was right. There was, however, an entire convenience store's worth of soda.
Milk wouldn't have done you any good anyhow, Ashley said. I just realized all the bowls are dirty. The maids don't come until noon.
Maids? I asked.
Yeah, to clean up after us. You didn't have maids in spy school?
No.
Ew, that stinks. Guess you're even happier that you're not at that lousy place anymore.
I sure am, I lied. Nefarious was acting as though we weren't even there, his full attention riveted on his video game. He was strafing an enemy base, mumbling to himself the whole time.
Avoid enemy fire, stay calm, depress triggers.
More explosions rocked the room.
So, Ashley said, have you had a chance to poke around yet, or would you like the tour?
A tour would be great. Seeing as there were no bowls or spoons, I dug a handful of Lucky Charms out of the box. This is as far as I've gotten. I only regained consciousness a few minutes ago.
Cool. Ashley led me across the room. Obviously, this is the living area. Our bedrooms are all upstairs.
There were four rooms up there, I said. Does someone else live here?
Ashley hesitated the tiniest fraction before answering. Nope, that one's empty. It's only the three of us here for now.
Where do all the other students live?
Ashley looked at me curiously.
There are no other students. You mean we're the entire school?
Joshua didn't tell you? Ashley laughed. I guess he thought you knew or something. Yeah, it's only us here. This is a much more elite organization than the CIA. That place will let practically anyone in. No offense.
None taken.
But Spider's different. They're not recruiting future desk jockeys here. Our projects are complex and devious, requiring exceptionally intelligent employees with highly specialized skill sets. It's harder to get into Spider than it is to become an astronaut. You can't just be the cream of the crop. You have to be the cream of the cream of the cream. So you should be darn proud of yourself for making the cut. Plus, Spider doesn't want to be some giant bureaucratic organization anyhow. They want to stay lean and mean and under the radar. There's not many people in it, period.
How many?
Ashley shrugged. No idea. That's confidential. But most of the people you see working around here, security guards, maids, groundskeepers and such, they're not official Spider employees. In fact, they don't even know Spider exists. They're just subcontractors who think they've been hired by a legitimate homeowners association. Okay, here's the gym.
She led me into a surprisingly large room. There were treadmills, stationary bikes, and a weight bench, although most of the space was given to gymnastic equipment. Uneven bars, a balance beam, a pommel horse, a trampoline, and a lot of tumbling mats.
Suddenly, the leotard made sense.
You're a gymnast? I asked.
I was. For the first time, the smile faded from Ashley's face. Her eyes narrowed.
Did something happen? I asked.
Something didn't, Ashley said. I tried out for the U.S. Olympic team and didn't make it. I came in sixth. You never heard of me?
No, I admitted.
Exactly. No one ever hears about the sixth best gymnast in the United States. They only hear about the five best, the ones who get to go on and represent the country. Do you have any idea what it's like to spend your whole life working toward a goal? 10 hours a day, 7 days a week, giving up any semblance of a normal life, putting everything you have into it, and then not getting it?
Sort of. I just got booted from the CIA.
Well, imagine you've been training for that since you were four. It totally blinks.
Blows plus stinks?
Yes, and it blinks big time. I came in sixth by 1/100th of a point. One judge thought I didn't stick the landing on the dismount for my balance beam routine, even though I did. I totally stuck it. But that's gymnastics for you. One lousy 1/100th of a point makes all the difference between living your dreams and having them dashed to pieces. Sure, they say you can come back and try out again in another 4 years, but you know they're only snowing you. By then, you'll be 4 years older, and there'll be a whole new crop of younger gymnasts who can't wait to crush your dreams again. I didn't want to spend another 4 years setting up for another heartbreak, but I didn't know what else to do, either.
So you turned to crime? I asked.
Sure did.
The anger seemed to evaporate from Ashley, and she was suddenly chipper as a chipmunk again. I took all that rage and hatred and bad energy and refocused it into this. Joshua came to recruit me right after the trials. Apparently, it's a pretty common route from Olympic sports to crime. I hear one of the higher-ups at Spider is a decathlete who barely missed the cut a few decades ago. Ashley led me back into the main room and shut the gym door. Nefarious had paused his air raid mission to get another bag of Cheetos. Now that he was standing, I could see he was far less physically impressive than Ashley. His legs were as skinny as chopsticks. He looked like a strong breeze could knock him over.
Ashley just told me her story, I said. What's yours? Why are you studying to be a criminal?
Nefarious didn't make eye contact. He stared at the floor instead. For a moment, I thought he was going to return to his game and start mumbling again, but instead he said,
My parents named me Nefarious. What else was I supposed to do?
That's it? I asked.
Nefarious shrugged, then headed for the couch again. As he did, though, he shot a sidelong glance at me, allowing me to catch the look in his eye. He seemed livid. Maybe it was the thought of his parents, or the idea of his own ridiculous name. Or maybe he was angry at me for bringing it all up. But whatever the reason, it was extremely unsettling.
Let's go see the rec center, Ashley suggested.
There's a rec center? I asked, surprised.
Oh yeah, it's Swassum. Want to come, Nefarious?
Nefarious made a noncommittal noise. It sounded like, Then he plopped back in front of the TV and resumed his game.
Okay, see you later then.
Ashley found a pair of sweatpants in a wad by the front door and yanked them on before leading me outside. You're going to love the rec, she said as we crossed the lawn.
It's so much fun. There's a spa and bowling alleys and a rock climbing wall and a pool with 2 water slides.
Wow. My excitement was genuine. Our pool at spy school didn't have water slides.
Really? What did it have?
Bacterial contamination. They had to shut it down last spring. A couple of kids who'd gone swimming ended up covered with hives. They looked like raspberries and Speedos. Ashley giggled, which was kind of weird. I hadn't expected someone training to be a criminal mastermind to giggle.
Guess you're happy you're transferred here, huh? She asked.
I sure am. This time, I didn't have to try quite as hard to lie. Now that we were outside our house, I saw that it looked pretty much like all the others. The homes across the street had yards that backed up against the wall surrounding the property. Meanwhile, the houses on our side backed up to a large common space. We took a landscape path that ran past our neighbors to get to it.
How long have you been here? I asked.
A little over a year, Ashley replied.
And Nefarious came a few months before me.
And it's been only the two of you training for that whole time?
Yeah, so it's pretty exciting to have someone new here. Someone fun.
Ashley grinned widely and batted her eyes. She was cute, which made me uneasy. How do you know I'm fun?
Anyone's fun compared to Nefarious. I mean, he's nice enough, but frankly, the guy has the personality of an eggplant.
We emerged into the common area. It looked like the best public park I could have ever imagined. In addition to several wide lawns, there were brand new tennis courts, basketball courts, batting cages, and a soccer field.
Does Nefarious do anything besides play video games? I asked.
Not much. He's pretty introverted. You got more words out of him just now than I have in the last month.
You're joking, right?
Ashley shook her head. He's an odd duck. Something seriously messed him up. I'm betting it was his parents.
Could be. What kind of people name their kid Nefarious?
Exactly. Although believe it or not, Nefarious actually got off easy. According to his file, his folks named his little sister Placenta.
Ooh, that's rough.
Given how Ashley had just gone on about how rigorous Spider's selection process was, it surprised me that they'd chosen someone as socially awkward as Nefarious. But then it occurred to me that his awkwardness might actually be tied to his selection. After all, there was a flip side to the argument that Spider recruited only the elite. Most teenagers weren't inherently evil. Sure, there were plenty of bullies, nimrods, pinheads, and other assorted jerks out there, but still, it'd probably be rather hard to find kids willing to commit large-scale assassination, chaos, and mayhem, no matter how much you were offering. That'd leave a pretty small pool of potential recruits, meaning Spider might have to settle for a kid like Nefarious, someone so socially maladapted that maybe he couldn't quite tell what was evil and what wasn't. We passed between an archery range and a croquet lawn. On both, the grass was so perfectly maintained that it looked like green carpet. "Do you actually ever go to classes here?" I asked. "Oh, sure," Ashley replied, "but they don't start until noon. The mornings are for training on our own schedules." Nefarious didn't look like he was training at all. Ashley paused a moment before answering. "Nefarious has a very distinct skill set. He does what he needs to do."
"And how does doing gymnastics count as training for you?"
Ashley grinned in response.
"Boy, you're just full of questions, aren't you?"
"I'm new here," I explained. "No one's told me anything. Is there an introductory pamphlet or something I'm supposed to get?"
"No, Spider doesn't print anything if they don't have to. That stuff can fall into the wrong hands."
We arrived at the rec center. It was a large building with huge glass windows through which I could see the rock climbing wall, which had a 3-story spire, and the indoor pool, which had several hot tubs. The rec sat at the top of a small hill, so I could see the whole gated community from there. According to the big sign at the entrance, the whole place was officially called Hidden Forest Estates. It wasn't very large. There was only one street, a loop on which all the other houses were built. The rec center was in the very middle of it all. I counted 24 homes, although the community wasn't finished yet. Halfway around, the asphalt road became dirt. A few houses were under construction, though many of the lots were still empty. The bang of hammers echoed from the building sites while bulldozers rumbled around them. The wall was finished, though. It swept around the entire community, topped by barbed wire and security cameras, except for 2 imposing gates and a guardhouse at the front. Although the security was there to protect Spider, it didn't look any different from what I'd seen at plenty of other gated communities.
"Are those houses all for our teachers?" I asked.
"Some of them," Ashley replied, "though our teachers aren't just teachers, like at your old school. They all have real jobs for Spider, doing all sorts of important stuff for our projects, but they take a little time every week to teach us about their areas of expertise."
"So there's more to this place than just the school?"
"Oh boy, yes, a lot more. This is Spider's world headquarters." I looked around the property again, stunned by Spider's brilliance. Unlike James Bond villains, they hadn't built a giant secret lair on some remote island. Instead, the organization was hiding in plain sight. They'd built a gated community that looked like every other gated community in the country. There was nothing about it that seemed remotely unusual or that would grab the attention of the USA's spy satellites, although I suspected that, as with everything in the spy game, there was a lot more going on at Hidden Forest beneath the surface. I asked, "Does everyone who works for Spider live here?" Ashley giggled again. "Of course not, silly pants. Spider has operatives all over the world. But this is Command Central, the heart of the organization. All the important stuff happens right here." I looked at the land beyond the security wall. There was a farm on one side of the community, a bucolic place that looked straight out of a picture book, with a red barn and green fields. On the other side, there was only forest, lots of deciduous trees, which meant we were probably somewhere in the eastern United States.
"Any idea where we are, exactly?" I asked.
"I'm not authorized to divulge that information to you at this time. Sorry." I nodded, having expected this. "I'm guessing that I can't just walk out the front gate, either." "Now why would you want to do that?" Ashley waved a hand toward all the great things around the rec center. "We've got everything you could possibly want right here." I glanced back at the security wall again. There was something unusual about it, something that made it different from the walls at other gated communities, although I hadn't noticed it until now. The barbed wire at the top angled over both sides of the wall, meaning it wasn't there just to keep people out. It was also there to keep people in. I was trapped at Evil Spy School.
Chapter 6. Education. Spider Agent Training Facility, September 5, 1200 hours. My evil training began at noon. The first class was Advanced Weaponry. This took place on the indoor shooting range, which was in the rec center, tucked between the squash courts and the sauna. Our instructor was Mr. Seabrook, who reminded me a great deal of my advanced weaponry instructor back at regular spy school. Both men were tough, tightly wound, and constantly annoyed with how bad I was at advanced weaponry, or even basic weaponry for that matter. While I was skilled at figuring out how to aim a weapon, firing one was a whole different ballgame. "Ripley!" Mr. Seabrook yelled after watching me empty an entire clip of ammunition at a target silhouette and only graze its elbow. "My grandmother can shoot that gun better than you can, and she's dead! How on earth did you ever manage to defeat our organization twice with skills like those?" "I've always been more of a problem solver than a shooter," I explained. "Well, you'd better start practicing," Mr. Seabrook grumped. "Right now, there's no way in heck I'd trust you with a gun. In fact, with those hands, I'm surprised you can even use a fork." I did much better in my other subjects. Over the next few days, I was quickly immersed into the routine of evil spy school. Although we had our mornings free, instruction and training started immediately at noon and went straight until dinner time, even on weekends. Classes occurred in a variety of ways. For some, an instructor came to our house. For others, we went to the instructor's house. And for yet others, we telecommuted, connecting with someone via the giant TV in our living room. For most of these, our instructors' identities were kept secret, and we saw them only as silhouettes. Plus, we spent a great deal of time doing physical training, either in our home gym or at the rec center. For the most part, our instructors didn't appear to be blatantly evil. Instead, they were disturbingly normal. In fact, they were considerably more normal than my teachers at spy school had been. Mrs. Henderson, who covered mathematics, science, and bomb construction, was a doting motherly woman who often cooked dinner for us as well, while Mr. Garabindian, our coach, who insisted we just call him Mr. G, was supportive, cheerful, and friendly, even when showing us how to kill someone with his bare hands. The only instructors who were even a bit nasty were Mr. Seabrook and Joshua Halal, who oversaw many of our lessons and still seemed bitter with me for making him lose a few parts of his body. My classes, like my teachers, were bizarrely normal as well. There was surprisingly little that was evil about them. Many of the self-defense, explosive, and weaponry courses were eerily similar to those at spy school, while other subjects were tweaked only slightly. For example, while spy school taught counter-espionage, activities designed to thwart spying by an enemy, evil spy school taught counter-espionage, figuring out the methods the good guys were using to thwart you spying on them, and then thwarting those so you could get back to spying on them in the first place. Some classes weren't much different from those I would have had in regular middle school. For example, advanced mathematics was just advanced mathematics, although Mrs. Henderson did try to spice up the word problems with the occasional evil scenario. If Ernst Blofeld has a 30-ton surface-to-surface missile and he wants to destroy a government installation 35 miles to the north with a 20-mile-per-hour wind coming from the east, how many pounds of thrust will he need to launch the missile and demolish his target? The only class that seemed remotely illicit was Lying Low 101, which taught us how to set up fake personas, forge government identification, and establish bank accounts in countries with loose financial regulations. And that wasn't really evil so much as moderately sneaky. It was all kind of disappointing. I hadn't expected evil spy school to be crawling with jackbooted minions and run by a maniacal genius fiendishly plotting to overthrow the world, but I'd figured it would be at least a little less ordinary. I began to wonder if Spider was cooking up any sort of evil plot at all. Had they merely recruited me in the hopes that I'd be of some future service? And if they hadn't, what was the point of Erica, and whoever she was in cahoots with, railroading me into going undercover right then? Which led to another, even more unnerving question. What if Erica hadn't been behind my ouster at all? What if I'd blown up the principal's office on my own, truly been expelled from spy school, and misinterpreted Erica's final words to me? If that was true, then I had enrolled in evil spy school by accident. Not only would this have been a terrible mistake on my part, but there was probably no way to undo it. I couldn't just go to Joshua Halal and say, "Here's a funny story. I only agreed to come to this school because I thought the CIA wanted me to be an undercover agent here and find out what your evil plans were. But it turns out they didn't. So do you think I could just drop out and go back to normal life? I promise I won't tell the CIA anything about your secret hideout." It would never work. If I wasn't really an undercover agent, there were only two ways to leave evil spy school: as a graduate or as a corpse.
This put me in the strange position of actually hoping Spider was plotting something. If the organization was truly hatching an evil scheme, then there was a reason for me to be undercover, which meant Erica might have really sent me there. Unfortunately, during my first few days, I hadn't seen any evidence that Spider was plotting anything at all. But maybe that was evidence in itself. Even though they'd recruited me to their school, Spider was taking great pains to keep secrets from me. True, Spider was an extremely secretive organization to begin with. And true, they might not fully trust me, seeing as I had been recruited from their rival school. But I got the distinct sense that they were hiding something. For example, no one would even tell me where Hidden Forest was located, and I wasn't allowed the chance to find out, either. My phone hadn't been returned to me, and I was barred from using anything that would allow me access to a global positioning system. I was given a computer, but it was only for writing papers. I wasn't even allowed to go online. If the compound had Wi-Fi, no one had given me the access code for it. "This is ridiculous," I groused at dinner on my third night. "Without the internet, I can't even do any research for school. There must be a wireless connection somewhere around here, right?" "Maybe," Ashley said, dumping power powder and almond milk into the blender. "But if there is, I can guarantee you we're not allowed to use it." "Why not? Doesn't Spider trust us?" "It's nothing personal. It's for our protection. They can't just let us all surf the web, because any line out is also a line in. The government could use it to access our computers." "That's not true," I argued. "It is. That's how Spider accesses the government's computers." This bit of news was disturbing to me, but not exactly a surprise. Spider was a subversive and technologically advanced organization. Frankly, it would have been more startling to hear that they hadn't accessed the government's computers. I pulled the pizza I was making out of the oven. It was the frozen, store-bought kind, although Spider's purchasing department had at least sprung for an expensive brand. I would have preferred delivery pizza, but, of course, no outside companies were allowed past the front gates for security reasons. "There's no way they can give us any kind of secure access?" I asked. "Even for a few minutes a day? I'm not going to watch YouTube or anything. I just want to send my folks an email, let them know I'm okay." "Oh, you've been doing that plenty," Ashley said. I looked up from slicing my pizza. "What are you talking about?" "Spider handles all communication with your parents for you," Ashley fired up the blender. I had to shout to be heard over the appliance. "How?" "They send a communications representative to a remote secure site to handle all personal correspondence," Ashley shouted back. "You're not the only one here with family, you know." "And it doesn't bother you that they do this? Are you kidding? I love that I don't have to deal with my parents." Ashley flipped the blender off and returned to her normal voice. "It's one of the best perks at this school."
"I'd be happy if I never had to talk to my folks again," Nefarious said from the couch.
I'd forgotten he was there, even though his standard airstrike video game was on the TV. This was because, with Nefarious around, a video game was always on the TV. After a while, it became background noise. I'd already begun tuning it out, the way that people who live near airports tuned out the jet planes roaring overhead. Nefarious was such a fixture on the couch, I tended to not notice him, or to at least think he was in his own world and not paying any attention to Ashley and me. As it was, he hadn't even taken a break from his gaming for dinner. He had a bag of Cheetos in his lap and a can of Pepsi wedged between his knees. Nefarious didn't even seem to be aware he had spoken. The words appeared to have slipped out of his subconscious. He was now entirely focused on the game, doing his standard mumbling commentary. "Adjust flaps, incoming missile, evasive action." "What do they say in these emails?" I asked.
"Oh, the standard stuff, I guess." Ashley poured her shake into a glass. "School's great, you're making friends, learning a lot, blah, blah, blah. If anything serious happens, like your grandma dies, they'll let you know. Want some shake?"
Ashley held the glass out to me. I cringed reflexively. The shake didn't merely look disgusting, a thick brown slurry. It also smelled bad enough to kill a canary.
No thanks."
"You sure?" Ashley pressed. "I made plenty, and it's super healthy for you." "Maybe," I said, "but it looks like the stuff that ought to be coming out of you rather than going in." Ashley stuck out her tongue in disgust. "Laugh now, but I'm going to live to be 150 drinking this stuff. The way you two eat, you'll be lucky to make it past your 30s. "If Spider finds out I'm a double agent, I won't make it past 13, I thought. Then I said, "What about our friends? Does Spider handle all communication with them, too?" Ashley hesitated a moment too long before answering.
"Sure."
"Do they really?" I asked as pointedly as I could. Ashley looked to Nefarious, who remained fixated on his game. Then she looked back to me and cracked.
They do, but it's pretty hard to have friends on the outside when you work for Spider. Too many secrets to keep and all. So, after a while, Spider kind of weeds them all out of your life. We have to give up all our friends? I gasped. You gave up most of them when you ditched spy school, didn't you? I was thinking more about the friends I had from outside spy school, I said, which was only half true. Yeah, you kind of have to drop them. Ashley seemed sad for a brief moment, then perked up again. But on the other hand, we're going to get really rich at Spider, and we can be friends, right? Right, I agreed, though it took everything I had to paste a smile on my face. Down inside, I was overcome with anguish. If I really had mistakenly enrolled at Spider, there were a lot of bad things that would result, but losing my friends would be the worst. Having to cut ties with Zoe, Jawa, Chip, and Erica, who I still considered a friend, even if she might not have thought of me that way, had been bad enough. The idea of losing Mike as well was soul-crushing. For all its faults, spy school had allowed me to have friends on the outside, provided that I followed strict secrecy protocols with them. Even though evil spy school had plenty of perks, free food and private bathrooms and water slides and the promise of riches ahead, there was no way those could ever compensate me for a life without friends. Now I found myself desperately hoping I hadn't made a mistake, and that I was on an actual undercover mission. I was determined to find out what Spider was up to, thwart them, and be reinstated in regular spy school, where I could resume my old life, surrounded by my old friends as quickly as possible. The first step was to find a way out of Hidden Forest. If I was really undercover, I needed to be able to get in touch with the CIA. If I wasn't really undercover, then I needed a way to escape. I had to get close to the perimeter wall and see if there was any way to breach it, and while I was at it, I had to examine the rest of the grounds more closely as well. Unfortunately, doing this was more difficult than I'd expected. I didn't want to attract attention by nosing around too much, and I couldn't find a chance to sneak away. I was never alone at Evil Spy School. There was always someone keeping an eye on me. Spider's watchfulness was subtle, but effective. During class times, I was always with my instructors, and during free time, Ashley was always nearby. I wasn't sure if she was staying close because Spider had asked her to watch over me, or if Ashley was just really clingy. But the result was the same. Most of the time, this didn't bother me, because Ashley was surprisingly nice for someone studying to be evil, and quite fun to hang out with, as opposed to Nefarious, who remained as cold and distant as Antarctica. In fact, I suspected that Ashley's constantly wanting to hang out was a direct result of having only Nefarious for company for the past year. Living with someone so remote was practically the same as being assigned to solitary confinement. Even though Ashley had said she was fine with cutting off ties to her outside friends, she seemed to be dying for company. However, it would have been nice to have some time alone now and then. Ashley tagged along whenever I went to the rec. She was with me at every meal, offering to whip up another vile protein shake. And at night, after our homework was done, she hounded me to play cards or watch movies. Virtually the only time I wasn't with Ashley was at bedtime, but I could never slip out then because my window was bolted shut, and Nefarious was inevitably parked on the couch in the living room, blocking the route to the doors. Although he was always riveted to the TV screen and mumbling to himself, I wondered if he secretly was keeping an eye on me as well. It didn't matter what time of night it was, he'd be there, preventing me from sneaking out. As far as I could tell, the kid never slept, or at least he needed far less sleep than I did. So I was forced to wait for the right opportunity. In the meantime, I tried to be the best student possible, hoping to allay any suspicions Spider might have that I was a mole. I studied hard, I trained hard, I did well in all my classes, except advanced weaponry, but I at least tried my best in that class and earned a glimmer of respect from Mr. Seabrook. And then, on my seventh night at Evil Spy School, I finally got my chance. Chapter 7. Extraction. Spider Agent Training Facility, September 12, 0045 hours. Even though I'd never found a chance to explore Hidden Forest on my own, I stayed up late every night hoping for one anyhow. I'd sit in my room studying or reading, waiting in vain for Nefarious to vacate the living room and go to bed, until I passed out from exhaustion. Ashley was the opposite. Since she used a tremendous amount of energy every day, she tended to crash early. She was usually out cold by 9 p.m. On my seventh night at spy school, that didn't happen. Ashley acted like she was turning in early, wishing us a good night right after dinner, and disappearing into her room. She stayed so silent afterward, I'd assumed she was asleep. But then, At 12:45 in the morning, I heard her creeping about quietly in her room, the same way a teenager did when they were trying to slip out of the house without waking their parents. I pressed my ear against the wall we shared. It sounded like she was getting dressed. Then I heard her door creak open softly, followed by the sound of her feet padding slowly toward my room. I leapt back in bed and pretended to be asleep. My door opened. I felt Ashley's eyes on me. Then the door closed again, and her footsteps receded down the hall, toward the stairs. 30 seconds later, the front door opened and closed. Outside, a car pulled up in front of the house. Its doors opened and banged shut, and then it motored on. I pretended to be asleep for another 15 minutes just to play it safe. Then I got out of bed and dressed in the darkest clothes I had, jeans and a black t-shirt. I slipped out of my room. Nefarious's door was closed and locked, but then I'd never seen him actually enter his room. I checked downstairs. Nefarious wasn't on the couch. He'd been such a fixture there that this was quite startling to me, sort of like going to the National Mall and discovering that the Washington Monument had disappeared. I slipped out the door. Outside, Hidden Forest was eerily dark. The lights were out in all the other homes, and while there were street lamps, Spider had either installed them just for show or had forgotten to turn them on. We were far enough into the countryside that there wasn't much light pollution. The sky was shrouded in black clouds. I stuck to the shadows anyhow. Even though I was finally out of the house, I still wasn't in the clear. Spider doubtlessly had surveillance cameras everywhere, and there were people patrolling the compound as well. I spotted two of them wandering about in the distance. I was too far away to tell if they were the normal security guards who mistakenly believed they were working for an average, everyday gated community, or actual Spider agents, but it didn't really matter. Whoever they were, I needed to avoid them. Fortunately, I was quite good at this. At spy school, I had aced my exams in Avoiding Observation 101 and been highly commended on my skulking about. Now I stole through the compound with stealth and speed. The backyards of the homes across the street ran right up to the security wall, so there was no way I could get close to it without venturing onto someone else's property. I didn't want to wake anyone in the houses or trip any alarms, so I headed for the far side of the community instead, where the homes were still under construction and the wall was more accessible. The construction site was even spookier in the dark. The frames of the unfinished homes loomed like skeletons of enormous beasts, and the construction vehicles looked like killer robots. The ground was an obstacle course of hazards, plumbing trenches, 2x4s with nails spiking out of them, pointy end up, minefields of abandoned building supplies and broken glass. I almost toppled right into a giant hole for a septic tank. Even though it was 10 feet wide, it was invisible in the darkness. No one had bothered to put up any sort of protective barrier, so I didn't see the thing until I was right on the lip, pinwheeling my arms wildly to keep from tumbling in. The septic tank was already installed in the pit, but it was still a 4-foot drop onto a hard cement surface, the kind of thing that could easily twist an ankle or snap a bone. It was only after I'd regained my balance that I noticed the "Caution Open Pit" sign lying on the ground nearby. I encountered more septic pits as I continued on, but now that I knew they were there, I was able to avoid them more easily. To my dismay, the security wall around the community was impossible to breach. It looked normal enough, like any other wall around a gated community, but it might as well have been around a maximum security prison. It stood 12 feet tall, and the surface was perfectly smooth and unscalable. The barbed wire at the top canted back 3 feet on my side. Once I finally got close to it, I noticed there was yet another type of wire strung among the barbed kind. This was smooth and thin, and it connected to small transformers at regular intervals. I could hear the occasional faint pop coming from them. The top of the wall was electrified. The construction crews had apparently been ordered not to leave any ladders around, or, for that matter, any large length of wood I could have built the ladder out of, but the electric wire would prevent me from climbing the wall anyhow. If anything I was holding so much as touched the wires, I'd get myself flambéed. I spent the next 2 hours cautiously prowling along the wall, scoping it out for weak spots. I couldn't find a single one. Every now and then, one of the guards would wander down the road, and I'd have to lurk in the shadows for a few minutes until they were gone. The front gates were even more imposing than the wall. There were dozens of cameras focused on them, and 2 guards stationed in a small booth, even in the middle of the night. This was the only spot in the entire community where there was any light at all. In fact, it was lit as brightly as a baseball stadium, with Klieg lights all around, making it impossible to get anywhere close to the guard booth without them seeing me coming. And I knew they wouldn't let me just saunter out the gates. Not at 3 in the morning. Instead, they'd report me, and any goodwill I'd earned with Spider over the past week would be blown.
It was time to get back to my room. I'd probably been out too long as it was. I decided to steer well clear of the gates, carefully looping back through the construction area, and then cutting through the park in the middle of the community. I had just passed the rec center when I heard someone coming. I dropped to the ground, following the first law of camouflage. Quite often, the best place to hide is right in plain sight. On a pitch-black night, all I had to do to stay unseen was flatten myself on the lawn next to the tennis courts. A minute later, Joshua Halal came along. Although he was too far away for me to make out his face, I could tell it was him. He moved with a slight limp due to his fake leg, and even in the faint light, his metal hook gleamed. He strolled along casually, not looking the slightest bit furtive, even though it was now 3:30 a.m. Joshua was only 15 feet away from me when a cricket chirped right by my foot. Joshua froze and looked my way suspiciously. His one good eye shone in the night. I held as still as possible, knowing that a mere twitch of my leg or a rustle of the grass would give me away for good. Joshua stayed still for an unnervingly long time until the cricket chirped again. "Freaking cricket," Joshua muttered, and finally continued on. He headed to the rec center, typed the entry code on the security keypad at the door, and went inside. He didn't bother turning on the lights, so it was difficult to make him out. He was one shadow against another, but I could do it. He headed right for the 3-story rock climbing spire and twisted one of the handholds. A secret door hidden in the spire slid open. Joshua stepped inside and flipped on the lights. In the otherwise dark night, the sudden brightness was almost blinding. Joshua became a silhouette, which immediately began lowering into the floor. It took me a few seconds longer than it should have to realize that he was descending a spiral staircase concealed inside the spire. He was only halfway gone before the door slid shut, plunging the world back into darkness again. I stayed flat on the lawn, wondering what to do next. Following Joshua through the secret door seemed dangerous and reckless, but it was also what Erica would have done. Going home and waiting for another day, when Joshua wasn't in the secret room, was certainly more prudent, but when would I get the chance to investigate again? The secret door was right out in the open, which would make it difficult to access during the day, especially when Ashley was always hovering nearby. And for all I knew, it might be weeks before Nefarious abandoned the couch again, allowing me to leave the house at night. Plus, Joshua was up to something now. Why else would he be creeping about in the middle of the night? The point of my mission was to find out what Spider was planning. If I wanted to ever get out of evil spy school, I had to act. I sidled over to the rec center, entered the code, and slipped inside. It took me a few minutes to find the right handhold on the climbing wall. I fumbled with dozens trying to twist them one way or the other, but they were all bolted on firmly. Finally, I felt one give slightly. I jiggled it, felt something catch, and then rotated it clockwise. The secret door opened with a hiss, revealing the spiral staircase. I tentatively stepped onto it, and the door slid shut behind me. The staircase wound down 2 stories, leading to a surprisingly well-decorated underground hallway. At spy school, the subterranean tunnels were drab and dingy, but this one looked straight out of a 5-star hotel. The walls were wood-paneled, the floors were carpeted, and every few feet there was a vase with fresh flowers. If you're going to spend a great deal of time underground, this seemed like the way to do it. I crept down the hall. Through the door on the right was a conference room, currently empty, with an imposing oval table and 8 ergonomic chairs. Oil paintings adorned the walls. It looked like the sort of room you could imagine diabolical villains discussing world domination in. On the left side of the hall, there was a small kitchen. In it were a refrigerator, a sink, a microwave, and a frozen yogurt machine with a toppings bar. Apparently, the folks at Spider really liked Froyo Sundays. There were dozens of toppings, ranging from crumbled toffee to rainbow sprinkles. The kitchen was empty, although there were a few fresh drips of strawberry yogurt on the floor, indicating someone had used the machine recently. There was one last room at the end of the hall. I cautiously peered into it. It was a command center. It looked a bit like the living room back at the house I shared with Ashley and Nefarious, only significantly larger and with much nicer furniture. A fancy leather couch sat before an array of 4 high-definition TV screens. Soft jazz played from a surround sound system. Joshua Halal sat on the couch typing on a laptop computer, a frozen yogurt sundae on the coffee table in front of him. The laptop appeared to be connected to all 4 TV screens at once. A great deal of information was scrolling across 2 of them.
thousands of lines of letters and numbers. The third screen was full of words, but I couldn't read them because they were in Russian. The fourth screen showed a satellite map of a country road. Two blips were moving along it, one blue, one red. Joshua wasn't a very fast typist, on account of the fact that he had only one hand. Plus, he kept stopping to eat his yogurt, and he spent a lot of time watching the screen with the satellite map. I tried to focus on the other screens, hoping to catch a glimpse of something that made sense. However, on the first two, the information was scrolling too quickly to comprehend, even for me, and I was better at memorizing strings of numbers than most people. So I focused on the screen with the Russian words. Back during the Cold War, Russian probably would have been the first language I'd have learned at spy school. These days, it wasn't something you studied until later years. I'd been told to focus on Chinese and Arabic instead. Unfortunately, Russian wasn't like French or Spanish, which were somewhat related to English and could be partially worked out even if you couldn't speak them. The Russian words, and even some of the letters, were completely unfamiliar. It might as well have been Egyptian hieroglyphics. However, there were some numbers as well. Numbers were the same no matter what language you spoke. And Joshua was entering even more numbers. As I watched, he slowly typed them with his good hand, pausing now and then to check them against a piece of paper in his lap. I memorized them, although, sadly, I could find no pattern in them. 243.657 94.1 40.7057 73.9964 A message in Russian suddenly flashed on the screen. There were two buttons to click on. I couldn't read the word on either one, but it looked like the standard computer choice between save and cancel. Joshua clicked save. 3 seconds later, that screen and the two with the lines of code on them went blank. Joshua had turned them off. For a moment, I was terrified that he'd spotted me, but it turned out he was fixated on the map screen again. On it, the red dot raced past the blue one. Ahead of them, the road suddenly disappeared from view, indicating a tunnel. Joshua quickly downloaded something to an external drive, ejected it from his computer, and hurried to where a safe was built into the wall, the door wide open. Joshua slid the drive inside, shut the safe, and locked it. The safe had an electronic combination lock with 15 digits. Joshua returned to the couch and polished off the last of his sundae. On the map screen, the blue dot entered the tunnel far ahead of the red one and vanished from sight. The soft jazz suddenly cut out and was replaced by the sound of a phone ringing. The words, "Incoming call," flashed over the screen with the map. Joshua clicked a button on his laptop, answering the phone over the surround sound system.
"I see you're in position," he said.
"T-minus 60 seconds," I recognized the voice. "Ashley."
"Going live,"
Joshua typed a command. Views from four video cameras suddenly appeared on the TV screens, showing the inside of the tunnel from different angles. I figured Spider had installed the cameras well ahead of time in preparation for this event. They had extremely good picture and sound quality. Joshua said,
"Your practical exam and extraction is about to begin. If you do not succeed in this task, you will flunk the course."
"We're not going to flunk," Ashley said confidently. "Relax. This is going to be incrazing."
"Incrazing," Joshua repeated.
"Incredible plus amazing. Sit back and enjoy the show."
A sedan skidded to a stop inside the tunnel, angled across the center line. It looked like the type of car my parents would have bought if they'd had a little more money. Sensible with a bit of luxury. Nefarious was driving. Ashley got out of the passenger side. Both were dressed casually in t-shirts and jeans, like typical high school students, except for the fact that they had fake blood all over their faces. They looked like they'd just been in a terrible accident. Nefarious floored the gas and leapt from the car. It sped away, then plowed into the tunnel wall hard enough to crumple the front end. The windshield shattered and the airbags deployed. Nefarious then ran back to the car and climbed into the driver's seat, wedging himself behind the airbag. He slumped over and closed his eyes, pretending to be unconscious. An armored car now entered the tunnel, the vehicle that had been represented by the red dot on the map. The doors were marked with the seal of the U.S. Department of Justice. Ashley staggered toward it, waving her arms wildly, acting like a desperate car wreck survivor.
"Help!" she cried. "Help us!"
The armored car slammed on the brakes. The driver and the federal agent from the passenger seat leapt out. Although both had weapons in their holsters, neither one removed them. They both looked concerned rather than on guard, which made sense. After all, Ashley didn't look remotely like an enemy agent. She looked like a terrified teenage girl who'd just been in a car wreck. She sounded like one, too. She was so convincing, I almost bought her act myself.
"Please," she screamed. "My brother's hurt. He needs help."
The armored car's driver grabbed a medical kit and raced toward Nefarious. Meanwhile, the other agent tried to calm Ashley. "I need you to relax," he told her. "You might be hurt, too."
"I'm not!"